For developing countries, it can be hard to find the simplest things, like drinking water. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton talks with an early-stage startup about their efforts in Nairobi to pull water out of thin air. That conversation starts now.
Hello, and thanks for listening. This week, a themed show for International Water Week. Water, it's what keeps us alive. Water availability is an issue in developing countries and emerging markets, and wait for it, the U.S. too. Water cleanliness is an issue almost everywhere, including Flint, Michigan, where they can't be the only example of decaying infrastructure and poor management. Water technology is ancient, yet somehow still advanced. For instance, you can dig a hole in the desert, stretch a tarp or a raincoat over it, put a rock in the middle, and let it sit overnight, and it catches dew and humidity. My father-in-law taught me that one. And don't forget that Luke Skywalker was a moisture farmer back in Star Wars in 1976.
Your only concern is to prepare those new droids for tomorrow. In the morning, I want them up there on the South Ridge working on those condensers.
I think those new droids are going to work out fine. In fact, I also thinking about our agreement, about me staying on another season. And if these new droids do work out, I want to transmit my application to the Academy this year.
You mean the next semester before the harvest?
Sure, there's more than enough droids.
Harvest is when I need you the most. It's only one season more.
We all know how that turned out for him. But the real-life application of pulling water out of the air, even when there's almost no humidity.
The basic technology of atmospheric water generation ensures that you're almost getting distilled quality water. And in the devices that exist today and the standard that we are holding ourselves to, the water that's produced is WHO quality water. So that's the World Health Organization.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the co-founders of Majik Water, M-A-J-I-K. And yes, I will ask her from where their company name stems. Majik is an early stage pre-seed water technology startup. And it starts out our coverage of International Water Week this week. Here we go.
Anastasia Kishenko, and I'm the co-founder of Majik Water.
M-A-J-I-K Water.
Well, there's actually a story behind that. So
good.
The first four letters, Maji, is the Swahili word for water. Yeah, when people ask us, we make sure to tell them because there's the reason that we did that, not just the play on English words.
that's marvelous. What a great crossover. Well, let's stay on the origin story pathway here. Let's talk about your technology for Majik Water, and then we'll talk about how you three co-founders came together. But first, let's start with the tech. You're basically pulling water literally out of thin air, right?
Yes. We're doing what's called atmospheric water generation. It's not a new concept. In fact, it's been done in different ways for thousands of years. But what we're focusing on is how can we do this in some of the driest places in the world, where not only isn't there's no water on the ground, but there's actually very little humidity in the air. So we're sort of doubling down on the challenge. So the heart of our tech is using desiccant technology. And if you're wondering what the heck is a desiccant, well, if you ever bought a pair of sneakers or a new purse or something like that, you will likely have found a small sachet of what look like clear plastic balls. That's silica. And silica is just one type of desiccant. And desiccants are powerful, non-toxic, really low-tech materials that love water. So they absorb it to themselves, which means they attract it, they hold it. And when you heat the desiccant, they release it. So that's how those little balls keep your sneakers dry. That's also the type of technology we're using to pull water out of the air, heat it up, and then transform it into a source of drinking water.
I'm also interested in how you three women came together to form this company. That's also a very cool storyline.
Claire, Beth, and I met in sunny California in Silicon Valley, a place where neither of us are from or had ever been to before. We were there for a Google-sponsored sort of accelerator program that was hosted by Singularity University. Mm-hmm. And we were living at the NASA Ames Research Center in Mountain View for about 4 months. So we were there for the Global Solutions Program, which brings together 90 people from all over the world, from 50 different countries, who have big ideas about solving the world's biggest problems. And so we found ourselves there representing our respective countries. I was already working somewhat in this space with links to the Water X Prize and working on dew harvesting. So Beth and I connected in the summer because she had been working on water in a different way in Kenya, her home country. she had been selling and operating a successful water filtration business. So she was selling water filters. But she came to realize that they didn't really work when there was no water to filter. So, and that was increasingly the case in many places, not only in Kenya, but around the world. But of course, for her, what was most pertinent was the Kenyan water situation. Mm-hmm. And we met Claire as well, who's a British national, but was in the program with us. And she shared this vision with us for a world where water didn't need to be something you had to walk for hours for many people. And generally for a world where water was democratized, which means it was accessible and available to everyone who needed it. And then we developed our proof of concept there. And shortly after that, they went back to Nairobi and I returned to Canada for some time, but I was in Nairobi recently. So we're based in Kenya.
Part of my research did point out, Beth, you mentioned one of your co-founders there who is from just outside of Nairobi, I think, and she comes from a water family, if you will. She was working with her father's irrigation and farm, and her brother, I believe, works in roofing and other water divestments hardware. She also points out in one thing that has stood out for me in a lot of ways, and that is that women in some places, usually women, have to walk hours and hours for potable, drinkable water and bring it back. Is that something that this technology that you have at Majik is trying to help address, among other things?
Absolutely. Jason, you're spot on. Beth mentions that because for a lot of people in what we call the global north or the, you know, quote unquote developed world, that's not a reality we can imagine past a advertisement on TV that we might see. But for people in both rural, peri-urban, urban, affluent, lower income areas, we're talking across a wide spectrum of different people. This is a reality for them when it comes to accessing basic drinking water, is either a long distance or a long time in getting that water. But above all else, actually, in all these cases, it's the cost. So whether you're measuring the cost in hours in the day, that it's your opportunity cost, what you could be doing with that time other than getting water, or it's the actual monetary cost of purchasing what you're told is clean water from often uncertified water resellers who are getting it from a borehole, which is a type of well, bottling it and then selling it, because in a situation of scarcity, that's the only option you have, is to spend quite a premium to purchase water. What I'm trying to get at is that it's not always the picture we imagine in our heads, which is, you know, lower income, rural based people and citizens who are having to make that trek. It actually affects people all over the spectrum and puts them in that position.
I'm glad we explored that. I want to explore a little bit more of the technology part of it. I'm going to circle back on that, and then we're going to talk about some other applications and scale. So you have to heat the water that the desiccant attracts. What are you using to heat it, and were there any obstacles to that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the biggest, I wouldn't say obstacle, the biggest challenge for us is energy, as we see the case for a lot of this sort of tech. The energy is the nut to crack. So when we created our proof of concept in the summer, in California, there's no shortage of sun. So we leveraged that and we powered our proof of concept with photovoltaic solar panels. We found an array that could power our initial proof of concept device with enough wattage. But our goal now is actually to move away from that. And we are exploring solar thermal as a method of heating the desiccant. What that means is using a type of solar concentrator, which you can imagine, you know, if you put a mirror in front of the sun, that's a simple solar concentrator. So you're bypassing the need of using an electric generator to then heat a material, and you're going directly to the source and using the sun's heat energy to heat the desiccant.
Okay.
So that's what we're currently exploring as we design our functioning prototype. And that's helping us answer questions around how do we reduce, you know, the energy that we know we need by 10x and make this affordable and feasible.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like that, and also helps it to scale if you get to that point as well, because a simple solar panel and a simple connection might do the trick in very remote locations. We're speaking with Anastasia Kashenko. She is one of three co-founders of Majik Water. It's, in a nutshell, it draws water out of the air with a new technology that they are developing in Kenya. Let's talk about Kenya for a second. Do you have money and funding to maybe work in other areas soon? Like, say, well, honestly, California, we're kind of in a drought cycle.
So we're very early. So we are in the, on our funding roadmap, we're at one of the first stages.
Mm-hmm.
We were very happy to receive some funding and a partnership, an early partnership with one of Europe's largest energy companies, Electricité de France, EDF. So we got just under $20,000 from them in December at a competition in Paris. So that's given us that early sort of pre-seed funding. And what we're doing now is we've had, you know, investor meetings in Nairobi, and we're establishing those longer term partnerships for our bigger financing picture.
Anastasia, just a couple of quick follow-ups to that, and then I'm going to go back to tech one more time. But what kind of funding would you be looking for? Like, what ponds are you going to be fishing in? Is it going to be the Gates Foundation or philanthropic charitable organizations like that? Or is it going to be more of a commercial funding or a more traditional VC route?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. We are working on those answers ourselves as a team right now, working with some advisors and really honing in on what makes sense for our product strategy. That being said, we are a for-profit startup. We are not a not-for-profit. We believe that the business model is essential for the success we hope to achieve. So the type of funding that we will go after will reflect that. The Gates Foundation and the ones that you mentioned are fantastic. We've actually met people from both of those in the summer while we were still in Silicon Valley. And we would love for any relationship with them moving forward. That being said, we are focusing on funds, grants, and funding that is appropriate for a for-profit startup.
Okay, I have another question about the technology, Anastasia. What about air pollution? I imagine that maybe in the Kenyan countryside, things are beautiful, but I imagine in Nairobi, in Los Angeles, in San Francisco, air pollution could be a factor. How do you work that into your tech?
Thank you for asking that. That's probably one of the most popular questions we get is, if you're pulling water from the air and the air is dirty, isn't the water going to be dirty? Well, the short answer is no. The longer answer is the basic technology of atmospheric water generation ensures that you're almost getting distilled quality water. In the devices that exist today and the standard that we are holding ourselves to, the water that's produced is WHO quality water. So that's the World Health Organization. Mm-hmm. So as an example, the type of atmospheric water generation AWG machines you see on the market today, they often have a remineralizing aspect in their technology, which means that the water is usually condensed, it's directed, and then you add back minerals to it. So what I'm trying to say is the water is actually so pure that you want to re-add some of the things that you would find in your tap water for it to be palatable for people. The concern about air pollution is a valid one, but I'm here to allay that concern and say that the basic way that the tech works makes sure that there is no air pollution that travels beyond the intake fan of the device.
Okay, that's a great answer.
It never comes into your water.
Okay, so let's talk real quick about the efficacy of the desiccant. Can it be reused and used? I'm looking at possibilities where cost might get to be a problem for you, but if you can reuse effectively, that will help keep the bottom line under control.
Absolutely. In the case of silica, it's inert, it's non-toxic, it's totally safe, and it can be reused, what studies have found, for up to 25 years without losing efficacy.
Mm.
And we know for sure that in the five-year sort of product, the device life cycle, it does not lose its capability at all.
Very cool. I'm trying to ask questions. If I was sitting in the VC room and I was watching your pitch, I'm trying to think of what I would ask.
Yeah, definitely.
Anastasia, okay, so let's ask a more macro question. Where is this technology living right now in the real world in Kenya, and how is it operating?
It's living at our location in Nairobi at our office. It's operating at a small scale. Again, our proof of concept creates 10 liters of water a day in 24 hours.
And then so we have the proof of concept. That's a lot of water, 10 liters a day. Now, what's next on the roadmap for Majik Water? Is the next step a funding round, or is it rolled out into a different environment to test?
What's next for Majik is all hands on deck for our functioning prototype. So that's actually what's in the works right now as we speak, is we are designing the first iteration of our functioning prototype, which will sort of have the parts and the spec that we are creating originally and not just using existing hardware, which was what we used for our proof of concept. So that is the goal. It's what we're doing right now, and that's the immediate step, and that will determine a lot of things around funding and our next milestone.
Well, we wish you the best, Anastasia, at Magic Water. It's wonderful to talk with somebody who is still in proof of concept stage. That means we can circle back and check in with you later this year, see how things are going. Is that cool?
Yeah, and the other thing I'll say, Jason, for any of your listeners, is that you can find us online, M-A-J-I-K, Water, magicwater.co, or on Twitter, the same thing. And we'll be putting out a really fun monthly newsletter and stuff like that. So if you want to stay up to date with us, that's a good way to keep in contact. And we read all our emails, and we're just regular people, so we'd love to chat with you, too.
Well, I'll tell you, while you were giving me that answer, I went ahead and followed you on Twitter. So I'll be looking for those
awesome
updates.
Thank you.
Anastasia, thanks again. Good luck.
Thanks so much, Jason. It was lovely talking to you.
That was Anastasia Kashenko, one of three co-founders of Magic Water. She was in Toronto, having just returned from Nairobi. April 15th through the 21st is International Water Week, and to mark it, we chose two water-focused companies. First, Magic, which is a pre-seed funding startup using small grants from an incubator hosted by Google. And second, Icon Technology Systems. They make portable and somewhat larger water purification systems using carbon fiber, filters, and other newer technologies. Now, while this is International Water Week, we have some startling water statistics for the United States to share, and they reflect the quiet danger that is just below our feet. By the numbers, here are the water challenges we face here in the U.S. 1.7 trillion. That's the number of gallons of drinking water we lose every year to faulty, aging, or leaky pipes. And when you add in leakage from sewer and storm water pipes, that number goes to 6 trillion gallons. 238,000. That's the number of water main breaks every year in the U.S. That's 700 a day. That's one almost every 2 minutes. 47 years. That's the average age of our pipes. Pipes in urban centers are often older. Philadelphia's pipes have an average age of 78, and Washington, D.C., 77, New York, 76. D, that's the grade U.S. drinking water and wastewater infrastructure receive from the American Society of Civil Engineers. $1.27 trillion. Now, that's what we need to invest over the next 25 years to keep our water and wastewater systems in a state of good repair. Stormwater systems will require an additional $300 billion over the next 20 years. That's a total of $2 trillion. Now, that's a lot of math on the radio, I know. So if you need some visuals, you can check online at thevalueofwater.org, or you can go to kgoradio.com and look for the show notes for this week's Techonomics. We have plenty of water-related information there, of course. Coming up after the break, the second half of our Water Week show, this time a more mature company that produces Liberty bottles. Those are water bottles with filters and other technology that turns mud puddle water basically into drinking water.
So you can effectively use this product in practically any water source with the exception of salt water, even down to a mud puddle. Some of our products have a scavenged sponge. You can dip it into a mud puddle and then wring that out into the bottle itself and utilize that to purify the water.
That's coming up next, so please stick around. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.